You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Here on a Thursday, Mike McNamara for a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're having a good day. I am. Yeah, because I had a good day yesterday. Yeah. No, you know, it's a very cool experience to, take something that you've worked on and, take it to people who can help and then have them come up to you after, and talk to you about how moved they were, how they've never seen anything like it, and wanting the open doors. So yesterday was great. Didn't start off great. I woke up at, what time was I going to get up? I was going to get up at 5. No, I wasn't. I was going to get up at 4. So I woke up at 3:50 something. So laid in bed for, I don't know, 10 minutes, got up. Here's what I'd be cautioned about. The traffic on the Beltway is a nightmare. Okay, so you want to make sure, right, you can be on the HOV lane until 6 o'clock. And then you got to get in, right, with everybody else. And I was supposed to be there between 7 and 7:15, blah, 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 blah. So, I called a couple people and they said, you want to leave at 5:30 at the latest. And I thought, 5:30 at the latest, that doesn't get me to the Pentagon before 6 when I'm supposed to get off, then I can either. Right? So I want to say, I intended on leaving at 5. By the time I got the windshield defrosted, it was about 5:09 when I actually set off for D.C., and I was in a parking garage across from the Pentagon at about, 40 minutes later. About 5:50. And I was pretty pleased with myself. So then what I did was I sat and I worked on a presentation. It was awesome. That worked out great. So I just made sure that I had all the right things that, when I'm doing it shorter, which I had to do yesterday, I have to make sure that shorter videos are in there. But there's newer stuff in there that I wanted them to see, right? Things that I've updated here in the last few weeks. So, and I had to send to them the PowerPoint before that. So anyhow, I worked on that, and then I was hoping that. And so the way these things work is, you know, the military has its own internet system. Okay, it's closed. So you try to email a file, a big file, to somebody, and it gets stripped out. So how do they get a hold of it? They go home and they download it at home and take it to work, and then they do it. So I was hoping that if I tweaked this, I'd be able to walk in and either somebody would have a remote, like a thumb drive that we could put it on and then put it on their computer. But, and that all worked out. So that wasn't the issue. So I sit in my car and I work on it for, I don't know, the better part of an hour. Get all my stuff together and I head to the Pentagon. So you walk through this tunnel into the parking lot, Pentagon's there, go to the visitor's entrance, you walk in, give me your ID card, right? They punch you in, they see you on a roster, okay, go through the metal detector, exactly what you'd see at an airport to get into the Pentagon. So walked in, right, do my stuff, and they find a knife in my backpack. And it's the knife I use for my luggage because the zippers are broken. There's a zipper broken off. And there's two zippers broken off. So I have a pair of needle-nose pliers in this kind of Leatherman thing. And I've had for a while. And I use them to zipper the suitcase. Now, I don't know what I was thinking when I threw it into my backpack, because I never do that. It's never in there. It's always in my suitcase. But in there it was. And so I see them. They're looking. I'm like, what's in there? What are they looking at? I'm like, and what I thought they were looking at was a microphone or, you know, things I have in my backpack. And so they stop. So then they pull the knife out. I'm like, shit. And then they said, we have to check and see how long the blade is. If it's shorter than 2.5 inches, then you can keep it. But if it's longer than 2.5, then we have to confiscate it. And you have to go, we have to fill out a report on you. I'm like, shit. Now, how long is this going to take in the Pentagon? It's one thing to do it at an airport. It's another thing to do it at the Pentagon. What the hell? So, they say, you know, can you step in here? Sure. So I sit down, and they're very nice. And so they confiscated my knife, but it took about 20 minutes. And so I was a few minutes late to where I was supposed to be. Go in, get a badge, get your picture taken, blah, 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 blah. And, then go up to, it's kind of cool walking around the Pentagon, actually. All the portraits, all the portraits up there, all the different paintings of different, you know, things that have happened in military history, the different images that are up, and then, you know, things you see framed that you look at and go, wow, that's that guy's uniform. That's his uniform. And so, so just walking around, en route to go to speak, yesterday was just, I mean, if you like history and you like military, American military history, which I do, then the Pentagon's not a bad place to go looking at it. So got there and, met a lieutenant colonel. Her name is Meza, her last name. She's an Air Force, lieutenant colonel. And, she supports, the chairman's wife, and so kind of got everything ready, and then got a chance. I've known, again, you've heard this before, but I've known Darcy Neller, who's the wife of the commandant, for a long time, since 1990. Since about 1993, 1992, 1993, when I went to first LAR, she was there, and it was the spouses of all the service chiefs. And so the Commandant of the Marine Corps, Secretary of the Army, Secretary of the Navy, and the Chief of Naval Operations, their wives were there. And then a whole series of other NSA, things like that, their wives too. So they've all been around the military for a long time. And so it was interesting to meet them and then to do the presentation for them. And very, very cool, their response. Their response to it. And it never ceases to amaze me, the power of that presentation. And when you talk about things like the transformation that can happen to somebody, and that we in the DOD can be national leaders in fostering that transformation, and that we have to find a different way to make people whole again. Right? Not that they'll ever forget it, but we can make them whole. In fact, my own opinion is we can make them better versions of themselves. And so, it was awesome. It was awesome. And so, it wasn't done. So I did that. And then, I have friends who work in the Pentagon. So as I'm walking in, I look, and here's one of them. So, I'm walking and I see a buddy of mine by the name of Ted Greeley. Nickname, Angry Ted. And so I look and he sees me. He goes, "Mac, what are you doing here?" I said, "Don't you worry about it. They're a devil dog." He's like, "Really? Right out of the chute?" I said, "That's right. Right out of the chute." And so I walk in with Ted, and he was going to wait for me. And then I had the knife event, and so he had to go to work. So he couldn't wait for me. And so after I got done speaking and then kind of doing some socializing afterwards, he came down, and he, because you can't be unescorted, right? So he came down and took me to where he works and introduced me to some Air Force guys he works with, which is, I mean, Marines in joint environment, it's always funny, right? It's always funny. And so they were good dudes, and we were having a good time. And Ted's called Angry Ted for a reason. And he's called Angry Ted because he's angry most of the time, right? I mean, it fits. And so so there's nothing I like better than wire brushing angry people, right? So I get there, and I just start feeding it to him. And the people that work with him just love it. Right? I just absolutely love it, which is hilarious in and of itself. And so, did that. And then, so I hung out with Ted for a while. And then, another buddy of mine, Chris Bronzi, is there. And, so the Bronze Man, we go down, and Greeley and I find Bronzy, and we go get a cup of coffee. Now, Bronzy and I first meet at a place called Combat Outpost in Ramadi in 2004. It was in the spring of 2004, so not quite to the day that we first met, but pretty, I mean, within reason. So anyway, we go down, and we're getting a cup of coffee, and then, like all good things, that has to come to an end. And so so we're walking out, and as we're walking out, who do we see? Chris Bronzy's battalion commander, now General Kennedy, Major General Kennedy, who's sitting in there at a table having a cup of coffee with somebody. And then Chris Bronzy says, "Mac, look at that." And I look, And I said, okay, look, I know you guys think you got to go back to work, but we can't. We got to go down there. So we walk in, and Kennedy sees us, and his eyes light up. He starts laughing. And because we're great friends, right? And the last time we were all together was, and I've told the story of it, forgive me if I tell it again. I tagged along with General Kelly to go see Paul Kennedy and meet Chris Bronzy. I'd never met Chris. And so we must have taken part of General Mattis's PSD, because that's what Paul says. He says, and the two LAV-25s showed up. Well, really, the only person that rolled with two LAV-25s and up armored Humvees was Chaos. That's right. He was the only one who rolled like that. And so we go out to the combat outpost, and we're there, and the captain, the company commander, Chris Bronzy, he's talking to General Kelly, and he's kind of escorting him. They're walking the perimeter, blah, 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 blah. And so me and Kennedy are kind of trailing him, I don't know, by 20 or 30 meters, and we're talking, and all of a sudden you hear, dunk, 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 dunk. And I want to say they fired about a half a dozen 120-millimeter mortars in there because they thought it was they thought it was General Mattis because of the LAV-25. And so I remember running with Kennedy, and you know, it's all good till somebody gets hurt. And so it was actually kind of funny running, you know, and nobody got hurt in the mortar strike. And then, I don't know, as they were hitting, somebody shot machine gun into combat outpost. And somebody got hit, not seriously, they got hit in the leg. And so we were laughing about that. But the three of us had not been together. That's the only time, and they're both great friends of mine. They're both two of my better friends. And the three of us have never been together other than that one time. It's kind of weird. So this was the second time we were together. So very, very cool stuff. Very, very cool stuff today at the Pentagon. So sat around and talked with those guys for a little bit, and then left, and then went back to my son's house, had dinner with my younger son, Patrick, and so up in D.C., and Patrick just moved there, so did that, and then this morning we'll get up and get going and go do post-traumatic winning again down here in Quantico, and then have some meetings in the afternoon with people that are interested in it. So, exciting stuff. Exciting stuff. And I will tell you this. Oh, shit. So we're sitting there at the table in the Pentagon, and we're just talking. I don't even know what we're talking about. And all of a sudden, General Kennedy says, hey, I want you to meet somebody. And I said, all right. So I stand up and turn around, and here's the Secretary of the Navy standing there, Richard Spencer, former Marine. And, Paul walks over and he goes, hey, sir. And he sees Paul. His eyes light up. Paul's got a little bit of personality, and it's funny. So anyway, Secretary of the Navy's eyes light up, and he goes, hey. And he goes, what's going on? And he said, hey, sir, I want you to meet a friend of mine that's here doing some speaking. And he said, really? And he said, yeah. And he said he was up talking to the chairman's wife put together, and I'd like to meet him, and I'd like to get him on your schedule. And he said, sure. He said, what? And we shook hands. He says, and then Paul says, he talks. He does a thing about trauma, about PTSD, and how to turn it to the good. And so he looked at me, and he said, really? And I said, yes, sir. I said, it's called post-traumatic winning. And it's using our pain to help others, and therefore, along the lines of what happened at the Hanoi Hilton, living a greater life than you thought you could live. And he just looks at me, he said, he looks at Paul, he goes, we need to get him on my schedule. He said, I need to hear it. I said, all right. I said, love to. And so, interesting. I almost forgot that little tidbit. Interesting, an interesting morning. Very cool stuff. And here's just an observation. Of a lot of people, that some of the most powerful reactions to this program are from women. And on a number of levels. One that they're included in is powerful. Two, the examples that get used are incredibly powerful for them. My sister, Elizabeth Smart, and then, you know, some of the other things that we talk about. And so it's just, and every time I do this, I think it changes me in some way, some small way every time I do it. And I wish I could do it every day, honestly, because I look forward to it, and it's so rewarding. I don't know what to say sometimes, but it's just really cool, to be able to do it and then to watch the reaction to it. So anyway, with all of that said, my adventure, and no, you know what they gave? They gave me a warning, relative to my knife. They gave me a warning. And, so I'm still good. I'm still good. United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official, so we'll get this thing on the road. Good Thursday morning to you. Is dedicated to Ellen Dunford and the group of women that I spoke to yesterday, and just to say thank you for the opportunity, and what a wonderful experience it was. So this is dedicated to them and what they do for all kinds of people without a whole lot of recognition. We have fun.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major, I'm very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds. And win. You got to win.
Somebody asked me, Mac, what are the daytime highs for all these different places that you talk about? And so, let me wheel back to yesterday, and I'll tell you. So, Quantico, at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 71 degrees under sunny skies. That's nice for D.C., right? Camp Lejeune, 65 degrees. Under sunny skies, so nice day on the East Coast. In Granbury, Texas, it is cloudy and 67. 29 Palms, beautiful. Sunny and 74, Pendleton. Clouds and 65. Okinawa, dark, cloudy and 63. Ramadi, at that time, would be dark, cloudy and 59. So if it's 59 in El Anbar in the evening, that means it's a nice day. And then in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it is dark, cloudy, and 72, which means it's pushing up probably mid-80s, near 90 degrees. And at the home of All Marine Radio, that I'm not out. But Jack and Joe are. Cloudy and 65. So, yeah, let's look at the daytime highs around some of the places that we only look at the weather in the morning. So, there you have it. We're going to take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage. Nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Or visit VeteransCrisisLine.net.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Matt.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is if you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue. But it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
And thank you to The one and only Colleen. Yeah. Colleen starting driver's training. Got that going for her. Yeah, behind the wheel. Got a permit. The whole nine yards, man. So, coming to a theater near you, you might want to, if you live in Southern California, be careful. Right? Big eyes. Not really sure what she's doing. Has that look on her face. Yeah, you might turn. You might want to head the other way. But exciting stuff. Exciting stuff. The all right, we're gonna head straight to the news and do kind of an abbreviated version as I get ready to get out the door, head over to Little Hall and do post-traumatic winning. So we'll do that right away. With apologies to Peyton Davis for not hearing her this morning. You know, there's been a story hanging around for the last week, and that is a story about a Marine Corps veteran, right, disabled in Afghanistan, won $250,000 settlement after a park ranger allegedly used excessive force over the use of a handicapped parking spot. And come on. But so we'll check it out. You shake your head when you see these. You see these, right? Let's see. The Marine's name, he's a sergeant. Captain Dominic Esquivel, right? Purple Heart, Gold Star. 2012, a disabled Marine veteran was visiting the Sequoia National Park in California, where he says a National Park Service ranger used excessive force against him over his use of a handicapped parking spot. Despite displaying an appropriate handicap marker, a park ranger didn't believe he was disabled. He wears a brace on his left leg for an injury from a 2011 IED explosion in Afghanistan. At the end of the confrontation, the park ranger kicked the Marine veteran's leg and handcuffed him. I'm a combat wounded, and you're going to kick my salvaged limb, Esquivel said, as he told the ranger and his nearby partner, according to the Washington Post. The charge against Esquivel for failing to follow a lawful order was dropped, but he filed a lawsuit against the federal government over the excessive force that could result in the loss of his leg. On Tuesday, the Washington Post reported that Esquivel won a $250,000 settlement from the federal government in March, as it was trying to avoid a trial. He told the Post that he was grateful the ordeal was over, but he plans to have the foot totally amputated, calling the injured foot a total loss. Esquivel was awarded the Navy Cross for braving machine gun fire to rescue two Marines and carrying out the body of another during Operation Phantom Fury, also known as the Second Battle of Fallujah in Iraq in 2005. It's amazing, right? What? So you're, what do you think the other side, what do you think the other side of the story is? I don't know. Here's another stupid story. Marine veteran running scam charity targeting Marine Corps families pleads guilty to wire fraud. You believe this? A Marine veteran running a scam charity called Marines and Mickey pleaded guilty to wire fraud, according to the United States Attorney for the District of South Carolina. The story started, I don't know, sometime last year. John Shannon Simpson faces 20 years in prison and or a fine of $250,000, according to a press release from the U.S. Attorney's Office, Sherry A. Linden. She is of the District of South Carolina. Federal government says that the 43-year-old founder of the charity built people into donating money to help send Marines and families to Disney resorts and to cover the cost of attending boot camp graduations. Victims of the scam included active duty Marines and Kathy Wells, whose son Lance Corporal Skip Wells was killed in a 2015 attack on the Military Recruiting Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. According to court documents, Wells gave nearly $135,000 to the charity, some from her son's own death benefit. From 2014 to 2016, Simpson raised nearly $481,000, according to the court documents. He pocketed $391,000 for his own personal use and enrichment. Can't make it up. Can't make it up. I hope he goes to jail, right? A lot of time, you can't send people for white collar crime to jail if it's a first time offense. They'll plea bargain it down to something else. Let's hope that cooler heads prevail and he gets sent to jail. Unbelievable. Another story. U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters clash with ISIS days after declaring victory. Again, you've seen that the last few days. It's like, oh, everybody was supposed to be dead, 100%. This is stupid. Another story, next story, and then we'll check out the top five in Early Bird. Trump may, quote, take care of F-35 S-400 issue, according to a Turkish official. I'm not really sure. Standing on a 360-degree stage surrounded by NATO members and supporters on the alliance 70th birthday, less than 2 hours before the Secretary General is scheduled to make an appearance before a rare joint session of U.S. Congress, Turkey's foreign minister planted his flag. Turkey doesn't have to choose between Russia and any others, and we don't see our relationship with Russia as an alternative to others, said Mevlüt Çavuşoğlu. I screwed that up more than likely. Minister of Foreign Affairs for Turkey said at the NATO Engages event, nobody, neither West nor Russia, should ask us to choose. Throughout the 30-minute appearance, he underlined Turkey's view that his nation must engage with Russia as well as the West in order to maximize both political and business potential for Ankara. But he was most direct when discussing the plan to buy Russia's S-400 system, which has become an internal flashpoint for the alliance, saying, it is definitely going to happen. It's a done deal, he said. This is a done deal. He also claimed that U.S. President Donald Trump has opened the door to keeping the F-35 sales to Turkey going, despite a Pentagon statement this week that the Department of Defense was cutting the delivery of parts for the planes needed in advance of Turkey's taking the jets into service this summer due to the S-400 issue. Man, let me just tell you, you know, at some point, like, I'm sure the president's got, like, all kinds of blowback from Boeing and Lockheed and all these different companies that say, hey, you can't allow, right? You can't allow, maybe Boeing doesn't give a crap about this one, but you can't allow, you know, these kind of issues to stop these huge contracts, right? Turkey's buy is instrumental in keeping the price point where it has to be for you to afford them. And if they don't buy those, then it affects everybody. So you sell them to somebody who's buying the weapons to shoot them down? Knowing that so anyway, it's just, you know, you look at it and you're just like, it's head scratching. This is what we're going to do. Okay, I got it. Top five stories in Early Bird. Number one, Air Force again halts KC-46 deliveries after more debris is found. And what they've been finding is foreign object debris, or FOD, right? And FOD is a big deal around jets because they get sucked into the engine and they destroy engines, which are pretty expensive things. So evidently, when they take delivery of them, there's FOD in compartments that it's not supposed to be in. You gotta be shitting me. Number two, NATO Chief Stoltenberg meets Trump, encourages German fair share. You think? Gently nudging Germany? We've been gently nudging Germany for how many years? Germany's a joke. From the 75th Ranger Regiment to the Pentagon, General Clark now helms Special Operations Command. General Richard D. Clark took command of U.S. Special Operations Command. Did I say Central Command? I meant Special Operations Command. From General Raymond A. Thomas, the third, during a change of command ceremony in Tampa, Florida. So a former Ranger, now head SOCOM. So congratulations to him. Number four, U.S. South Korea building capability up with military exercise, not scaling it back down. Interesting story in Stars and Stripes. Joint military exercises conducted by the United States and South Korea last month boosted readiness, the U.S. Defense Chief said, Mr. Shanahan, defending charges aimed at maintaining calm with North Korea, right, as we attempt to facilitate nuclear talks. So, again, North Korea, United States, no deal in their last meeting. North Korea creating activity around their test sites and us returning to doing exercises. So the dance goes. Film at 11. The fifth story in early bird this morning, Turkey's marriage of the F-35 and the S-400, absolutely unsustainable, says the UCOM commander. U.S. general nominated to lead American forces in Europe said Tuesday that if Turkey buys the Russian S-400 air defense system, it should not get the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. That stands in stark contrast with the article we just discussed relative to Turkey's foreign minister. One more interesting little article in Stars and Stripes. I told you, Stars and Stripes for years, I had, to me it was like boilerplate for the DOD. I don't look at it like that anymore. Stars and Stripes write some pretty interesting stuff about the DOD that you don't see in a lot of other periodicals. So, here's a story that I didn't see anywhere else. Missile tracking aircraft arrives on Okinawa amid fears North Korea may lift testing moratorium. A U.S. reconnaissance aircraft that specializes in surveilling and collecting data on ballistic missiles has arrived on Okinawa amid fears that North Korea may be planning to resume test launches. So, again, the dance in the Western Pacific continues on all fronts. So, anyway. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you're going to hear an interview I did in 2016 with Carl Marlantis. Carl Marlantis is a noted author. He wrote Matterhorn. He also wrote What It's Like to Go to War, two books that I would recommend to you. And he's a smart guy. Went to Yale and was a Rhodes Scholar, and then went to Vietnam as the recipient of the Navy Cross as a first lieutenant. And he's a smart guy, he's a deep thinker, and he's come on All Marine Radio a few times. And so enjoy every time we have him. So you're going to hear the first interview I ever did with him. So interesting guy. So don't touch that dial here on a Thursday. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.